Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to Live Dharma Sunday. If you have called in to listen to this morning's broadcast, please note that all lines have been placed on mute to avoid background interference. If you are joining us from either the Bright Dawn main site or the Blog Talk Radio site, please note that it is not necessary to call in. If you're experiencing loss of audio or the Blog Talk Radio player is not working properly, please refresh your page and hit the play button once more. It may take a few moments for your browser to complete the buffering process. Once again, welcome to Live Dharma Sunday and enjoy the broadcast.
Good morning and welcome everyone to Live Dharma Sunday for Sunday, July 17th, 2011. And as you may or may not know, Live Dharma Sunday is sponsored by Bright Dawn. And I thought I might mention for those that are not familiar with this background of the name Bright Dawn, name of our organization, which is the translation of the Dharma name Gyomei. My father, Reverend Gyomei M. Kubose, and Gyomei is his Dharma name given to him by his teacher, Reverend Haya Akegarasu, when my father was ordained in 1936. And became a minister. And as you know, Dharma names in our tradition has two Chinese written characters. And Gyo is the dawn, and Mei is the bright. So Bright Dawn is the meaning of his Dharma name, Gyomei. And since our organization, our purpose is to carry on his approach of, you know, the way of oneness. And it's interesting how I remember in the early days he spelled Gyomei, G-Y-O-M-E-I. That Mei is usually spelled M-E-I, Gyomei, what's so-called Romaji pronunciation and spelling. But I guess it must have been difficult for English-speaking people to correctly pronounce that Mei, you know. So he changed the spelling from M-E-I to M-A-Y so that it would be easier for people to say Gyomei when they see that. And that's just a kind of interesting history in terms of his Dharma name. And then I was thinking, well, you know, in Reverend Akegarasu's tradition, many of his disciples had Dharma names that had to do with the sun and with the dawn, sunrise. And in fact, when there's this, our family story, you know, there was three children in the family, my brother, myself, and then my sister. There's 5 years, we're all 5 years apart. My brother was born in Japan in 1936, so this was, you know, a year after my parents went to Reverend Akegarasu's temple, and they stayed there five years in Japan. And during that time, my brother was born, and when they came back to Los Angeles in 1941, just before the beginning of World War II, and I was born in Los Angeles. And then after the war started, the families, as most Japanese Americans on the West Coast, we went into so-called relocation camps, and many families stayed there 3-4 years, and instead of relocating back to California, the family relocated to Chicago. Many Japanese American population had swelled there and other big cities, and they had a need for religious needs for a church, and so my father and their family went there after the war, and my sister was born in 1946 in Chicago. Now, how did they name their three children? I guess they had a plan, and this is the story, our family story that I heard. It all has to do with the son, and my brother was named Don, D-A-W-N. They didn't know it was a girl's name. See, it's a nice name. And, of course, he changed it later on when, as we chuckle when we say this, but in high school, we were all raised in Chicago. I went to grammar school and high school in Chicago. That when my brother went into school, and in high school, he was put into a girls' gym class, just based on the name. So he changed his name from D-A-W-N, Don, to Don, D-O-N. Yeah, it was pretty easy change in a sense. But here comes the Don, and the second child, after the Don, there's the son. And I'm told that my English name is Sunan, S-U-N-N-A-N. And that's a unique name. They kind of made it up. And the way I understand it is they were studying about the sun, which is a very common theme in a lot of religions and philosophies. The sun is important in Egypt and Egyptian culture, Chinese, everything. The sun is a very powerful symbol from ancient times. So I'm named for the sun. And my father was studying about the sun and thinking about the sun. And there's the root word for sun, medieval word, was sana. And they put an N on it to make it, sort of sound better, and sanan. And a lot of people thought that maybe that was my Japanese name. But it's not. It's my English name. My Japanese name, which was very common for third-generation Japanese-Americans, we had an English name and then the Japanese name. So, for example, my brother Don, his Japanese name was Akeru, which means, again, to open up. It's a dawn, dawning of a new day. And so and being a minister's son, my Japanese name was also my Dharma name, given when I was born, of Koyo, to face the sun. Now, okay, so I've got my English name and a Japanese name, Sanan Koyo. But I used my English name. We don't usually use our middle names. Okay. My father's given first name was Masao. That was his name until he got his Dharma name, but he started using his Dharma name right away when he got ordained. I received my Dharma name when I was born, and I didn't have a calling or anything, so I was just using my English name of Sanan. And in fact, people that call me Sanan, they're probably my friends that I grew up with in Chicago. Okay. Koyo to them is they don't know that person. Then the dawn, and then the sun, and then the people are happy, full of joy. So my sister, they said, well, I'm going to use joy. People are happy. The sun came out. Then, well, they made it a little bit longer, and they made it Joyce. And her Japanese name is Terumi, which means to shine brightly. So this was a story. And I also had trouble with my English name, as my brother did with Dawn being a girl's name. Now, Sonnen, I don't think has a gender to it, but, you know, if you look at the printed name, Sonnen Kubose, it's kind of an unusual name. So if a new teacher sees that name, they don't know if that's a boy or a girl. You see the name on a piece of paper, Sonnen Kubose, printed there. And if they glance at it, and this was in elementary school, the first day of school, a new class, a new teacher, and they're going to assign the seats, right, and take roll. They're going down the list. They come to my name. They don't know me. And they just glance at Sonnen Kubose printed there. It was very common. They'd say, Suzanne Kubose. And so it was, but I grew up that way. And maybe this is a variation of, you know, Johnny Cash's Boy Named Sue song, and it's what gave me character and so forth and all of that stuff. Yeah, I didn't mind. It wasn't that traumatic. You know, I didn't ever think of changing my name in any fashion. Okay, but I did change my name when I was in my 40s and when we started Bright Dawn. And I decided, gee, my father used, when he got serious about his path, he took his Dharma name and used it all the time as his major first name. So at that point, I started using Koyo in all the religious contexts. And that is sort of the story when I was thinking about, oh, here, Bright Dawn, here we are. Welcome. Where does Bright Dawn come from? What are all these names about? So I thought I'd share that. Well, we have our guest today to give us a Dharma glimpse. And his name is Gio Sayo Sugrains of Orlando, Florida. He was a part of the Lay Minister 3 group. He's been very active in Bright Dawn and also in the Trailblazers group. The Bright Dawn Trailblazers group, which is the, after becoming lay ministers in our two-year program, then all the lay ministers, they joined the Trailblazers, which is a resource group for all Bright Dawn lay ministers. And we have a president, and then they can share their experiences and so forth and engage in continuing education programs for themselves and so forth, and have a fellowship too. But Trailblazers, you know, our program, being a non-sectarian, we're an independent organization, we're blazing new trails of Buddhism in America and modern Buddhism, okay? And it's sort of like, you know, I like pioneer, you know, Western, the Westward movement, pioneer days, mountain men and all this stuff, and the wagon trains rolling west, you know, part of our history. You know, I love that rawness, that time, that exploration, that adventuring spirit. And each wagon train has a scout, and they got to go through uncharted lands. But the scout, you know, if he's experienced, maybe he went this way before. But still, they're blazing new trails. So these Bright Dawn lay ministers are blazing new trails in their locales, you know, all across the country. So we said, call the group Trailblazers. And somebody put a cowboy hat. You know, we have a logo, the Bodhi leaf with the sunrise in the middle of it. That's our Bright Dawn logo. And somebody put a cowboy hat on the tip of the leaf. And I think that might have been Sayo. but I love that. So for today's Dharma Glimpse, Sayo, Sensei.
thank you very much, Irwin Koyo. Yeah, every time we speak of the Trailblazers program, I always saw the Bodhi leaf sort of wearing the cowboy hat and trailblazing down a trail on a horse and all that. So I thought it'd be a cute little addition to that. But thank you and good morning, everyone, out in internet radio land. Well, if I were to give my Dharma glimpse a title, it would be Celebrating the Dharma. You know, I think we all know one of the basic definitions of the word Dharma, even though it's one of those words that can never be truly translated. But traditionally, Dharma is the teachings of the Buddha. But for me, Dharma is life. It's all phenomena. Every moment contains Dharma. When we become one with the Dharma, reality or truth, then the Dharma can be experienced at all times, you know, beyond temples and our practice spaces or even our special place of tranquility. So, you know, sometimes we hear people, we hear of people who say, well, I practice the Dharma. And this usually means that one puts into practice the teachings of the Buddha and try their hardest to develop further realizations of truth. But for me, instead of trying to practice the Dharma, I celebrate it. And let me explain. As I mentioned earlier, when you become one with the Dharma, beyond dualistic notions of this is Dharma, this is not Dharma, you begin to experience Dharma in all life. You know, Dharma, the light of wisdom, is always shining, and nothing can hinder this light. When I sit in my special place of tranquility in the mornings and evenings, instead of seeing it as a time to read or chant sutras or practice meditation, I see it as a time of celebration. I see, you know, since I'm always embraced by Dharma, by light, instead of having formal practice sessions, I have celebrations. And I think this, to me, at least for me, makes it more fun and not something I feel like I have to do because I'm a Buddhist. Instead, it's a celebration, you know. And even during the day, I find time to celebrate by lighting a candle or burning incense, you know. It's just, you know, like when we put candles on a birthday cake to celebrate a person's birthday or make the house smell good for our guest. And I even celebrate when times aren't so good. You know, it may sound funny, but it does help in seeing these troubling situations through the light of Dharma instead of sort of going crazy and allowing all the afflictive emotions to take over. So in times of peril and times of trouble, I celebrate the Dharma and quickly remember how even these situations should be celebrated and not denied or pushed aside or avoided. You know, there's always a teaching in these situations if we look at it from this open point of view. And we can also see, you know, like I said, Dharma as life itself. You know, we don't practice life. We don't tell people, hey, I'm practicing life today. Oh, I'm practicing life too. You know, we live it. We live life. So we celebrate it. And so the same can be said of the Dharma. When we become one in Dharma, we live the Dharma daily, non-dualistically. There is no more practicing the Dharma, but living the Dharma. You know, so every day, every moment, every activity becomes a cause for celebrating this oneness with Dharma. And we are so fortunate to be awakened by the Dharma that, you know, this celebration erupts from within, you know, joyfully and with gratitude. You know, so in my actions, my speech, and my thoughts, I celebrate the Dharma at every moment, even if it's just with a simple, you know, joining my hands in gassho and oneness. So in reality, life is a party, you know, if we see it that way. Every day there's a party going on, and, you know, there's a daily celebration. So today, go out and celebrate the Dharma and celebrate your life. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I like that. Every day is a party. Yeah. And I guess when we say, yeah, we don't usually say practicing the Dharma, or we don't say practicing life. You know, we celebrate life. Dharma and life, this is an important thing, you know, important fact. And sometimes we need to clearly realize that fact. the Dharma's life. That Buddhism is not something special in the sense of being different from life. If we say, oh, you want to learn the Dharma, or you want to learn life? Now, by learning life, meaning, hey, how do you get along in life, right? Says, oh, we got psychology, and we got, secular teachers, and, education and so forth to learn about those things. I want to learn about spiritual life. I want to learn, about Buddhism, about religion, to help me, live life. But living life is one whole unified thing. Life is not divided up into, subject matters. No. Life is what it is. You're alive. It's your life. We might talk about psychological aspects, historical aspects, philosophical aspects, religious aspects of one's life, college majors or college departments, academic departments of study. You got physics, history, sociology, and you could specialize in that. But there's a misleading aspect that could mess us up a little bit if we don't realize that in life, you want to lead a good life, period. An authentic, true, real life. And if we hear some teachings, we might dismiss some important teachings because it doesn't have the label of Dharma, Buddhism. And I remember hearing a Buddhist teacher's comment that when he was giving Dharma talks, and in the back of his mind he was thinking to himself, see, you know what I'm saying is not so deep, not so special. It's just, what is that, common sense. I wonder whether these people, all my students listening to me, would ever react that way and say, gee, he's not talking about the Dharma or Buddhism. He's just talking about life. One time I heard, remember a story, D.T. Suzuki, famous, Buddhist figure, gave a Dharma talk, and he just talked about his garden. Now, I don't know what exact content of that talk and whether he made the explicit associations to Dharma teachings. Okay. Sometimes the reader or the listener might have to see the obvious metaphors and so forth. But this point, which I want to emphasize because I think that our program, our Bright Dawn, emphasizes this. And my father did this. Hey, this is the rationale. This is the, our basic assumption of putting a light on this, shining this, focusing, emphasizing this aspect of the Dharma, that it is life. And this is not to devalue religious terminology and so forth. Okay? But from our point of view, all the terminologies and so forth are aimed toward enhancing one's life. Okay? Not just our Dharma life, our Buddhist life, our religious spiritual life, and so when we hear some news or receive some information in the media that does not necessarily come from a religious, teaching context, we should be able to recognize and say, hey, this is helpful, and I will incorporate this, okay, in my spiritual journey, okay, in my life. And for example, I was reading the other day in the local newspaper, where it's probably a syndicated column, it's like a Dear Abby thing, but it's a modern version called Ask Amy. And a woman asked for help because her boyfriend is giving mixed signals. And to make a long story short here, the lady says, Dear Amy, my boyfriend and I were serious, and he used to be very loving and affectionate, but now that seems to have weakened, and I've tried to deal with this, but I'm having a lot of trouble. He says things change, and the relationships change as you. And he says, hey, and the boyfriend says, hey, you changed. You're too clingy, and you're trying too hard. Now, the woman says, I know things can't stay the same forever, being that in the beginning when you're in a new relationship, very attentive to each other and, more lovey-dovey, okay? But after a while, that romantic aspect deepens. Hopefully, if the relationship's going to last and grow and change, you don't have to bring flowers every day and whisper sweet nothings all the time, okay? So she says, well, he says he still loves me, and he talks about his future, our future together, but he says, he feels pressured. So the woman says, well, so I'm getting mixed signals. I, too, love him dearly, but somehow I don't feel it's the same on his side. And it's a huge point of contention between us. I see some glimmer of hopes in some words and actions, but then sometimes it seems like he shuts down. Now, I know that I could be over-emotional, especially when I'm stressed, but he used to be much more caring, compassionate, and understanding in helping me work through these things. Now, it only frustrates him. Part of me wants to wait it out to see whether it's just a rut. Another part of me wants to cut ties now and just be friends then, if that's the way it's going to be, since we have a lot of mutual friends together. Okay, I'm 23, he's 28. What do you think I should do? Love stuck. Okay. Well, they're stuck. Amy says, your boyfriend is correct when he points out that things change over time. things change over time. It sounds like the teaching of impermanence, doesn't it? Things do change. And when a committed couple loves each other, things often change for the better. You should make any decisions about your future based on the idea that, that your boyfriend is going to be the way he is. And the only thing you can do, which is also the best thing you could do, is to work on your own behavior. Bam, there it is. Amy says, you sound eager to push the relationship into permanency, and your boyfriend's actions indicate he's just as eager, not to try to avoid that. Okay. Stop pushing and he might stop pulling away. Take a breather from the relationship to reassess the dynamics between you two. Now, I realize that asking you to stop being needy, anxious, and over-emotional is a tall order. But if you can marshal your own strengths and confidence, you receive more from the people who love you. Now here we go. You know, this could be put into the context of Eastern philosophy, Buddhism. Okay, but this is a column here, and it makes eminent sense. It's good advice. Better take care of yourself. Okay. You can't control all situations, and especially other people. You know. A lot of times we respond to, you know, this could be any kind of family situation. It could be, you know, long-time married spouses, siblings, parent-child. It's a, when you have interpersonal relationship, and this is where a lot of our conflict occurs. Because familiarity breeds contempt is a common saying. You know, we take each other for granted because we have a committed, safe relationship. We're family. So we're not quite as civil and polite sometimes as we are, ironically, to our friends or even strangers. Okay. Of course, this is different. Okay. But still, we ought to think about this. Well, what's the best way to handle the relationship? Okay, it might be a lifelong, some sore spots. Will they just be resentments that are pushed under the rug and just crop up during stressful times when you have an argument and you bring out the old ammunition? Well, you never do that, or you always blah, blah, blah. And, huh? Or can we, you know, we get externally oriented. X is the problem. Yeah, if only you. Hey, remember when you were so inconsiderate? This was when I really needed you, but you did. How about the center within? How about going beyond the relative world of fair and unfair, right or wrong? Huh? How about that? That absolute place, huh? Deep within us. Where we know how to handle X. Whatever X may be, not that, you know, X is not the problem. The other person, the relationship, it's how we deal with it. And if we deal with it from that deep center within, okay, that's the best way to live a life of Dharma. That's the best way to live life, period. So indeed, we need to learn this, because sometimes people who are, say, if they're Buddhist, okay, or and this holds for any, you know, Christian, Jewish, if you don't live your religion, see, and you learn things. Yeah, I'm a Buddhist, and I know this, and I know these things. But then, when life's difficulty, like in of a relationship, smacks you upside the head, sometimes we forget that how to deal with things, and it will help us if we say, "Hey, we want to bring the Dharma teachings to help us in times of difficulty." Well, this is when Dharma is the realities of things, I mean, right understanding, not just our narrow selfish view of things, which is what gets us caused the trouble in the first place. Okay? That this is not the realm of any particular religion or a particular approach, you know. It's about life. So, that's all for today's broadcast. Until next time, you keep going, and please have a very beautiful life today. Thank you.
Oh. Are you still there, Shannon?
Yes.
And Sayo's on. No.
Sayo
hung up.
What?
Sayo has hung up. So were you going to call him separately?
He was on Skype, he said.
Well, you can't. You have to tell him that you can't reach him. You can't be reached. You said you couldn't get the computer on. Right?
Well, I'm going to see if I could get Mozilla up.
Okay. Well, I'm going to hang up then. I'm going to end the episode.
And then shall I hang up my cell phone and the landline?
Yeah.
Bye.
I already hung up, so I'll see you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, please.